Today we're featuring composers who wrote great songs for kids' TV. Writing music isn't what Fred Rogers is most famous for, but his songs and his singing were an important and delightful part of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Last February, Fred Rogers died of stomach cancer at the age of 74. In 2001, after 33 years of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, he recorded his last program, but the program lives on in reruns on public television. Last year, Fresh Air guest host Barbara Bogave spoke to Fred Rogers, who was seated at the piano at his studio in Pittsburgh.
You write about a lot of everyday things. You also write about some pretty profound issues in parenting, about children's fears. I'm remembering a show you once did about how a child cannot go down the drain in the bathtub. You had a whole show about that. It sounds funny, but you're really meeting kids on their own level. That's a real fear. Did a child write to you, and is that where you got the idea for that?
A child played that out in front of me one time, making a character, trying to see if that character could go down a tube, you know, just a plain, ordinary tube. And I found out that it had to do with the drain in the bathtub. That child was petrified when his parent pulled the plug while he was still in the tub. And so consequently, we wrote a song about that, you know. You can never go down, can never go down, can never go down the drain. And then it goes on, you're much bigger than the water, much bigger than the soap. And it's true, but children don't know that when they hear this loud rush of the flush of water in the bathroom. They think they might be sucked down the drain. And so just to talk about it, people were very surprised that I would show a bathtub drain as well as a toilet drain and just say, you see, you could never go down such a small thing. Well, there were many children, I think, who breathed a sigh of relief just to be able to talk about it.
I have to ask you about the sweaters, and I'm sure you were asked about the sweaters that you wore on the show many, many times. But I understand your mother knitted most of them until her death.
She did. Mother was a great knitter. She would carry her knitting bag wherever she went. And she made a sweater a month. And at Christmas time, she would give 12 sweaters to this sort of extended family of ours. And invariably, she would say, okay, here's your sweater for Christmas, and here's the pattern book. Tell me which one you want for next year. Of course, I know the one Freddie wants. He wants the one with the zipper down the front. Well, I have all of those sweaters, and we used every one that she ever made for me. But that's been kind of a trademark, hasn't it, the sweater and the sneakers. And the sneakers came about because I had to run across the studio floor to get from the puppet set to the organ when I was doing the children's corner. And so the sneakers just became, I didn't want to make a lot of noise by running in other shoes.
What were you like as a kid?
I was an only child for 11 years, Barbara. And I had to make up a lot of my own fun.
I think you were sickly often, right? You had a lot of childhood diseases?
I had every imaginable childhood disease, even scarlet fever. And so whenever I was quarantined, and you know, they used to quarantine people for chicken pox and all of those things, I would be in bed a lot. And I certainly knew what it was like to use the counterpane as my neighborhood of make-believe, if you will.
You mean
I had puppets.
The window? You would use, what, finger puppets or shadow puppets or what?
And things on the bed. I would put up my knees and they would be mountains, you know, covered with the sheet. And I'd have all these little figures moving around, and I'd make them talk. And I can still see my room. And I'm sure that was the beginning of a much later neighborhood of make-believe.
Was King Friday the 13th one of your childhood characters, or Lady Aberlin, or Lady Elaine?
The king probably had his genesis there, but it wasn't that particular name, because it was a child who helped us form that name, King Friday the 13th. A child had been told that Friday the 13th was a very bad day, and he was afraid of those Friday the 13ths. And so I just said one time, why don't we have a character whose name is Friday the 13th, and he celebrates his birthday every time a Friday lands on the 13th.
Oh, that's so unfair.
and so his birthday, King Friday's birthday, is always every Friday the 13th. And I hear from people all over the world. You know, it's a joyous occasion for us. It might be otherwise for those who haven't been enlightened by the neighborhood. But
this is King Friday the 13th. I must explain a few things to Miss Beebe.
Yes, you're certainly welcome, King Friday.
Friday the 13th is a fine day, and may you not say otherwise. Thank you.
Oh, it's taken me back. No,
well, this is Lady Elaine, Toots. You ask about me, and I'm mighty glad you did. Have you ever been to my museum go-round? Well, you'll find everything that you could ever want in any one of those rooms.
Oh, this is X the Owl. You seem to be speechless, Barbara.
So true.
I'm just flying around here looking for you. There's Daniel Tiger over at his clock. Did you want to say hello to him? I mean, he's awful shy.
So, well, I am shy, but I would like to say that I'm glad you're having fresh air.
Oh, thank you for that. So is that how you spent the weeks when you were in your bed as a kid, making up voices?
Yeah. Voices for puppets and all kinds of stories. And then when I was 11 years old, my sister came, and then I wasn't an only child anymore.
Now, did you have a model for your Mr. Rogers persona, the perfect adult, and someone you knew, maybe your father, your grandfather, or?
Well, my grandfather McFeely used to say things to me, the kinds of things that I would say to the children on the air. We would visit him at his farm every Sunday. We'd go out there for dinner.
McFeely as in Mr. McFeely on your show.
Exactly, yeah. And that's my middle name. And that was my mother's maiden name. But we would go to his farm for dinner on Sunday, and invariably he'd take us for a walk around the grounds and say things like, I'm so glad that you come. And when we leave, he would say, you've made this day a special day. Things like that, you know, that just your being yourself is what matters to me. And he would take me fishing, and he was a wonderful person.
You worked with the people on your show for decades. many of them stayed for decades, right? And I was thinking that when people work together on a television show for so long, they often play some practical jokes on each other on the air just to keep things interesting. What kinds of pranks happened on the set of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood? Did they ever, you know, sprinkle itch powder in your sweater or anything?
No, but there were times when they put rolled up newspaper in the toes of my shoes so that when I was singing the goodbye song, I would try to get on my shoes, and of course they were much too small for me to get into. So the camera didn't show the shoes those days, and I was going out with my heels over the backs. And then one time there was this blown-up, voluptuous lady made out of rubber in a huge one in my closet when I opened at the end of the program to put my sweater back in the closet. Here was this lady waiting for me.
What did you do?
We taped it over. But you couldn't do that in the days of live television. And, of course, that's the way we began. We began a daily program, an hour a day, live, and we did that for 8 years. And that was called The Children's Corner with Josie Carey. And I did the puppets and the music for that program. And it was all ad-lib and live. And a most wonderful way of learning how to talk when the red light went on.
I have to get you to tell this story. I understand once the actor Michael Keaton was on your show. You had many celebrities on the show, but he made a little bit more mischief than most.
Michael worked with us on the studio crew before he ever went to Hollywood. And he was in charge of the trolley, the movement of the trolley in my room, and also picture-picture. And so there's a little sliding door right under picture-picture where I put in the tape. And so
this is the magic picture projector, right?
It has a
projector,
slot. Yeah. And one day I opened the slot to put the tape in, and I heard this voice say, "I'm ready to hear your confession, son." Well, that was Michael. And those are the kinds of things that he's just a wonderful person.
There have been many spoofs of Mr. Rogers, as I'm sure you know, over the years. Eddie Murphy's on Saturday Night Live is perhaps the best known spoof. I remember National Lampoon also had a skit based on your show. What did you think of those? How did you feel about the ribbing you got over the years?
I think most of them were done with a great deal of affection. I remember meeting Eddie Murphy for the first time over at the RCA building. And he came out of his office, and I was walking down the hall, and he put his arms around me, and he said, "The real Mr. Rogers." And Mr. Carson, when I was with him one time, he said, "You know, Fred, we would never do these takeoffs about you if we didn't like you. We wouldn't care about making you famous."
It's been wonderful to have you at the piano while we've been talking. Perhaps you could sing something for us or play something for us. Maybe not necessarily a children's song, but something you play for your enjoyment to take us out.
Thank you. It's such a good feeling, a very good feeling, the feeling you know that we're friends.
Oh, Mr. Rogers, thank you so much for talking today on Fresh Air.
Thank you, Barbara. Wish you well.
Fred Rogers spoke with Fresh Air guest host Barbara Bogave last year. He died earlier this year at the age of 74.